and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and we're going to be talking to Dr. Kayla Daniel tonight, about her book, The Whole Soy Story. We're going to find out a lot of things about soy that many of us, including myself, didn't know, but sure I'm glad that I know now. How are you, Dr. Daniel?
Great. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you, and thanks for taking the time to do it. I mean, your book is a very important book. I had no idea. In fact, the reason that I even found it was because I had some mind issues. And the only thing I could think of that I did differently was soy, and so I went searching and I found you. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and how you came to do this book, The Whole Soy Story?
Yes. Well, I got into nutrition and health and alternative medicine and so forth because, like a lot of people, I wasn't well, I wasn't healthy, I didn't have good energy. And I started trying everything. I was reading every book, trying every kind of diet. And the blessing from all that is that I learned many different dietary traditions, different ways of thinking and eating about food, etc. And I learned a lot. But along the way, I started noticing that all the alternative cancer treatments that are highly regarded, like Garrison or Dr. Gonzalez's work and many others, they all said, do not eat soy. And yet soy was being promoted as a health food. And I discovered with Ayurvedic medicine, they were saying soy was unsuitable for most digestive types. And with macrobiotics, it was just small amounts of old-fashioned fermented. And none of this jived with all the marketing about how healthy soy was. So that all aroused my curiosity. And I started researching it. And I thought it was going to be a simple, uncomplicated thing, but it was immensely complicated with thousands and thousands of studies. But that led me to write a book because I really wanted to give people the information they need to choose wisely. And we have so many people today who think that part of being spiritual is to be a vegetarian. And I wouldn't agree with that, but many people do feel that. And because of the horrible quality of dairy products in the supermarkets and even most health food stores, many people are not tolerating dairy, and so they're becoming vegans. And they're drinking a lot of soy milk, eating a lot of soy foods. And then there's all the busy people with their soy shakes and their soy energy bars. And we have a whole lot of people, either for health reasons or spiritual reasons, are starting to eat a lot of soy and paying a huge price in terms of their health collapsing.
So let me get over here to my page again. Are there any safe soy products?
Yes. Old-fashioned fermented soybean products such as miso soup, and tempeh, popular in Indonesia, natto, popular in Japan, those are fine, eaten moderately and eaten just a few times a week. And traditionally in Asia, that's how they would have been eaten, just small quantities as a condiment in the diet, not a staple food. And they are nutritious foods. I'm not calling them miracle cure foods. I'm just calling them nutritious foods, rich in vitamins and minerals, with some of the other problems that we think of with modern soybeans. Those old-fashioned fermenting processes remove some of those problems. So they are safe foods, they're good foods, I enjoy them, my kids enjoy them. So yes, there are some safe soy foods.
So what is the difference between first and second generation soy products?
Well, the old-fashioned traditional ones would include things like what I just mentioned, the fermented ones, and they would be fermented basically From short-term, like tempeh, to long-term, like miso. And the fermenting process makes them more nutritious, makes them more digestible, removes a lot of the toxins and what we call the anti-nutrients. Those have been used in Asia for several thousand years. Now, tofu is also an ancient soy product. And when I say ancient, I don't mean going back tens of thousands of years, because no soy product goes back that far. It's about 3,000 years tops. And tofu is one of the older ones. It's not fermented, so it's not as healthy as the other ones, but it's a whole soybean product. And if used in small amounts, like they do in most parts of Asia, that's not going to be a problem for most people. But that's traditionally, it's like a few cubes of tofu in, say, miso soup. It's not like eating a one-pound slab of tofu at a time, which can be a problem. Now, getting into your question, you were asking about second-generation soy products. That's when we get into the West, and we get into the different processing methods. And the first generation, where they would take the soybeans, and they did not do the traditional Asian things, but they would do things like, say, boil those soybeans, or they would make soy flour or roasted soy nuts, that kind of product, or soy grits. And those are the horrible-tasting things that some of us might remember from back in the 60s, which they were things they had in the hippie communes. And many people tried to use soy flours as part of making bread more high protein and to stop hunger and to up the protein content, etc. But the problem was those products produced a lot of gas, and they didn't taste very good. And the soy industry just knew that unless they came up with something better, they were not going to make a lot of money. Now, the second-generation products are the ones that came in after World War II. So right there, that tells you there's nothing traditional about this stuff. But we're talking about things like soy protein isolate, soy protein concentrate, hydrolyzed plant protein, textured vegetable protein, all these fancy names with the soy ingredients that we're now seeing in just about everything. Everything from health food store, veggie burgers, and energy bars to supermarket products where you find things like soy protein isolate in canned tuna, for example. They're in fast foods. They're everywhere. Now, these are products that are made with high temperature, high pressure, hexane solvents, acid and alkaline baths. They're made in billion-dollar factories. These are not things you could make at home. The processing creates carcinogens, and a lot of health problems associated with those products, just like with many other modern processed and junk foods.
What are protease inhibitors, and what is the relationship to soy?
Great question. Protease inhibitors, they inhibit protease. You know, it's just like what it sounds. Now, protease is the enzyme, or a group of enzymes, actually, by which we get help digesting protein. So a lot of people are eating soy, particularly vegetarians, because soy is higher in protein than a lot of other vegetarian beans and grains and so forth. But the problem is soy has protein, but the protease inhibitors that come along with it in the soybean, and this is naturally in all soybeans, whether we're talking organic or hybrid or GM or whatever, protease inhibitors are in all soybeans, and they make it hard to digest the protein. And the lucky people, in my opinion, are the ones who they eat soy and they get a tummy ache and they say, it's not for me. They're the lucky ones, because for them, they notice right away that it's hard to digest. They realize it's not good for them, and usually they stop. And I say they're the lucky ones because they stop, because other people react in a more mild manner and they don't realize right away. Over time, they'll notice they don't seem to digest things as well as they used to. They've got more gas problems. They've got more cramping problems and so forth. And they might start to go downhill bit by bit. And of course, there's other factors in the soybean that would contribute to that as well. But yeah, the protein protease inhibitors make it hard to digest soy.
So if you do use a soy product, regardless of what it is, let's say textured vegetable protein, does cooking affect it?
Textured vegetable protein, it has been cooked to death before you even get it. So you could cook that thing as much as you want, but it's not going to have any effect on it at that point. But in terms of protease inhibitors, they would be in something like the textured vegetable protein. But where they've been largely eliminated would be like in miso paste, which is what you make miso soup with. And that fermenting process will pretty much eliminate the protease inhibitors. Now, say boiling soybeans, if you're cooking them at home, that will eliminate some of them, but not all of them. And so it goes, it varies from product to product according to the processing. What you actually do in your own kitchen tends to not help all that much. With the boiling of, say, soybeans, you may have to boil those things for 6 hours or more before they all get soft, and that can be a challenge. And some of them will get soft before others, and some of them more digestible than others. But the only real way to solve the protease inhibitor problem is to pick the old-fashioned soy products like natto or miso or tempeh.
So another thing I learned in your book was smoked pork is really not smoked pork, is it?
Well, it's really going to depend on where you're getting it from. Now, I get my meat products directly from farmers. I know they're raised out in the sun. They're not cooped up. They're treated humanely. They're eating their native diets. And I would not worry at all about a roast pork or any pork products or bacon, which I love, from pigs that are raised in that way. But if we go to supermarkets or fast food places, it will depend from product to product on just what you're going to get. And a lot of these meats have been pumped up with soy protein and soy oil and other things, additives, flavorings, things to make it moister, and a lot of very dubious ingredients. And we do have to watch out for things like that.
One of the things you said in your book was if a product is marked smoked in the supermarket, that if they have to mark it smoked if it's been pumped up with soy.
The labeling requirements are one of the challenges for the companies that sell this stuff, that they can do it with no problem, say, at restaurants where people don't ask pesky questions about ingredients. But at the supermarket, or for that matter, the health food store, they're required to put a label on it. And so they're pretty much going to have to come clean with what's in that product. So if you're reading labeling carefully, you can usually spot those things. But if you're in a restaurant, like a fast food restaurant, the likelihood is very high that that's what you're getting.
Now, many people use soy as a supplement for phosphatidylcholine and lecithin to support myelin sheaths and nerves and brains. Is that really doing us any good?
What I would suggest people do is egg yolks are fabulous for lecithin and choline and all these good old-fashioned nutritional components that we need to be really healthy. And what we've got instead is so many people have been convinced that eggs are not good for them, and if they're going to eat eggs at all, they should eat the whites, and the yolks are just full of nutrition. The yolks are wonderful. And if people are avoiding eggs either because they've heard eggs are unhealthy because of the cholesterol or whatever, or they're trying to be vegans, then they're going to have this deficiency. And so many of those people will start doing things like taking soy lecithin supplements or phosphatidylcholine or phosphatidylserine to support the health of their nerves or the brain or whatever. And there's some research that suggests that the phosphatidylcholine and phosphatidylserine can be helpful for people. And that's probably true. But part of the reason people get into a situation where they need these supplements, which I think are somewhat unnatural, is that they're avoiding all the good, healthy foods that Mother Nature provided for us. And some of those foods that are high in choline would include things like the eggs I mentioned and things like liver. And what are we told to avoid? People think they should be avoiding meat and liver, organ meats, eggs, and you're going to be deficient if you don't include those good foods.
Does soy affect mineral levels? Magnesium, calcium, things like that?
Yes, it can. That's also a really great question, because so many people think that the soybeans contain a lot of vitamins and minerals. And this is true to a certain extent, but the problem is a lot of them are bound up in such a way that we cannot benefit from them. So you've got a situation where, say, the soybean is low in calcium to begin with. So with a product like, say, soy milk, they put they supplement it, fortify it with a calcium supplement. And that way they can sell it as equivalent to a dairy product, and people think that they're protecting their bones and they're drinking this soy milk for good health. Well, here's the problem. It would make sense to put the supplements in, but they're putting the very cheapest kinds available, and it's hard to digest forms of calcium. And then on top of that, they put in the vegetarian form of vitamin D, and the vegetarian form is D2 and not D3, and that also can create certain health problems and is not as useful to us. And then on top of that, with the soy milk, the manufacturers have not gone to the trouble to remove the phytates. And phytates are another component that are natural in the soybean that are not so good. And phytates bind with minerals, such as calcium. They bind with zinc. They bind with copper. They bind with a lot of minerals. And so you've got this soy milk, which they've added a bunch of cheap, hard-to-absorb calcium, but they've done nothing about the phytates that make it even harder to absorb the calcium. And we know that the children being given soy milk are not growing good bones, and we're seeing more and more problems with osteopenia and osteoporosis. And guess what so many women are doing when they get into the midlife period? They're drinking soy milk and eating soy products because they think it will help them with menopause, and that's the point when their bones can least afford not to be nourished.
Well, you brought up drinking soy milk. That's what made me call you, because I'm always, you know, looking at cutting edge thing and alternative things, and so I've decided I don't want the milk from the mammary glands of another species of animal put into my kids and myself. So we started drinking soy milk. Well, something happened to me when I did that. Something happened to my mind where I couldn't put sentences together. I couldn't use the vocabulary that I have. My focus of vision narrowed. I got to the point where, like, if I'm driving my car, I couldn't go from looking straight ahead to looking over my shoulder to see if there was a car coming if I wanted to change lanes. And I couldn't find any reason for it. So I went to an acupuncturist, and he did something to me. I don't know what he did, but it fixed it. But he said, "Are you using soy products?" And I said, "Yes, I did. I am. A lot of them, because I loved it. I loved it. It tasted good." And so I went to the acupuncturist that day, got better, went right home, used soy again, and the thing came right back. So finally it hit me, stop using soy. And it went away, whatever all of those problems was. What are those problems? What was happening?
Well, first of all, you know, I'm so sorry that that happened to you, and I'm sorrier still to tell you that it happens to a lot of people. And it's so often educated, smart women like you who have read that soy is going to cure everything from cancer to ingrown toenails, and then there's a lot of myths about vegetarianism that's out there. And if you're spiritually conscious, like you certainly are, there is the lure of not using animal products. And that leads a whole lot of women to start drinking things like soy milk. And many of them start drinking a lot of soy milk. And I think you said you loved it. And it's not surprising that you loved it, because here's why. Every single glass of soy milk with most of the common brands is actually loaded up with sugar.
Yeah, it was, and I loved it. But I didn't realize that's what it was.
And they put in a whole lot of sugar because otherwise it's just not going to taste good. And so
what was it doing to me? Why was it doing that?
Well, there's a whole bunch of possible reasons. And this is the whole thing about soy. You know, people would like to think there's just like one problem and we can solve that. But there's usually a whole group of problems and they contribute together. And sugar may have been part of it. Another big part of it is every single glass of soy milk contains quite a few plant estrogens. And we haven't talked yet about those, but they are one of the biggest dangers in soy products. And soy milk, every single glass contains a lot of it. And many women drink a lot of soy milk every single day. They might be having it for breakfast, say as a soy milk with soy shake powder, you know, double dose there. Or maybe they're just having it on their cereal. And then they might have an energy bar. And then they're going to have some more soy milk for lunch. And maybe they're going to have some tofu for lunch. Or maybe they're going to snack on edamame, a whole bag of it, in front of the TV that evening. And so they're getting a lot of soy. And the estrogen content gets very high. And I want to clarify.
That's what I think it was with estrogen, because I got this terrible brain fog, and when it lifted, it was like I was literally walking around with a cloud around me. I couldn't, my vision changed, my mood changed, everything changed.
And I wouldn't be surprised. And the thing is, I want to be clear that the estrogens in the soybean are not the same as they are plant estrogens. They're not the same as human estrogens. But the thing is, they're close enough to fool the body. It's like you've got a key that fits in a lock, but you can't turn it. It's that kind of thing. It gets into some of these hormone receptors, and then the hormones don't work. Or it interferes with the production of your own hormones. Or it just sends estrogens, the combined estrogens, the plant estrogens, the human estrogens, and everything just gets very, very high. And one of the complications and why it's so difficult to know exactly what's going to happen, because what happened to you, Eva, is probably different than somebody else. In some women, it will over-estrogenize them, and in some women, it will block estrogens so that it lowers their estrogens. With some guys, it will lower their testosterone levels. With many women, it of course lowers their testosterone as well, and we women don't have as much testosterone. But it does affect our sexuality. It affects how our brains work, how we feel, and those estrogens can interfere with our testosterone as well as our estrogen. It interferes with mood hormones. It interferes with so many pathways in the body. And some people will get the brain fog. Some people will have the energy loss. Some people will have weight gain. Some people will have all of those things. It's not completely predictable what's going to happen in a given woman.
Why is there copper toxicity and aluminum toxicity related to soy? Because I know that also affects mind as well, mood issues.
Absolutely. There's a number. I'll first address the aluminum issue, and along with that, fluoride, which can be another issue. And these are not issues that are exclusive to soy products. They're something that's a problem with just about anything that comes in a package. If you're eating processed, packaged, or fast food, you're probably getting a big load of aluminum, fluoride, and many other kinds of chemicals and heavy metals and so forth that we get in tap water and as part of processing. For example, if aluminum cookware is used, if aluminum vats are used, if it's wrapped up in aluminum foil or the soy milk is put in an aluminum-lined soy container. But it would be the same thing if almond milk is put in an aluminum-lined container, same issue. So the aluminum issue and the fluoride issue is more related to soybean processing and tap water and packaging issues. Now, the copper is an extremely interesting issue because a lot of women, whether or not they're eating soy, are overly estrogenized. And there's a lot of reasons for that. There's environmental estrogens, pesticides, plastics. There's estrogens in the tap water. There's estrogens in supermarket meat and supermarket milk, etc. So we have a lot of overly estrogenized women, period. And the situation is that they are often high in copper. Now, when somebody decides to use soy to replace meat and dairy, for example, as on a vegan diet, and say they're eating a lot of nuts and seeds, they're eating a lot of soy, they're eating a lot of foods like that, their copper is going to get high, and part of that picture is their zinc is getting low. And part of the reason is without the animal products, they're just not getting adequate zinc, or at least zinc that they can really digest and absorb. So you got a situation where their copper goes high. And so a lot of women are high copper anyway, and women who've eaten a lot of soy, their copper often gets very high. And when I work with clients, I always test them. I do hair mineral analysis testing, and I see a lot of high copper. And soy's part of that picture, and that's going to affect that brain. It's going to affect your thyroid. It's going to affect things like premenstrual syndrome or how you're going through menopause. It's going to affect fertility and brain function, you know, moodiness, anxiety, paranoia. Mood swings, high copper is a big part of that picture for many women.
Why is it happening with soy?
Part of it is the lack of usable zinc.
Oh, okay.
So part of it's not just that they're getting more copper, but the fact that because of the lack of enough zinc, the balance is all out of whack.
Okay.
And the actual ratio between zinc to copper is actually more important than how high either of them is.
So it's not that soy has copper in it, it's just that your zinc's down.
Your zinc's down, and also the woman will be overly estrogenized by the plant estrogens. So
okay.
That's part of the whole over-estrogenizing picture. But I just want to be clear, there's environmental estrogens besides soy, tap water, plastics, pesticides, etc. They contribute to it, too.
So have you noticed that there's that people who use a lot of soy also have addiction problems? Because I've been doing research on addiction, and some of the research that I found states that people who are addicts are more likely to be copper toxic and aluminum toxic. Plus, not to mention soy is full of sugar, which is what, you know, alcohol and other things make you want. Create things like that.
The addiction issue is very complicated. And many people who start eating a lot of soy are doing it to be health conscious. So many of those people, you know, may not be starting out as you know, the addictive personality, per se. They may be doing things like walking. They may have a spiritual life. There's many things they might be doing right in terms of the way they're living. But the addiction personality, sugar can be very much a part of that picture. With soy, some of the issues would have to do with hormonal fluctuation. And some people start to say how good they feel from their soy milk. And with some of them, it's just plain sugar. They had a sugar fix. You know, they might have gone off eating things like Snicker bars and Twinkies, and they're on a health kick, and they're eating soy, and they don't realize they're still getting a lot of sugar.
Okay.
So that's part of it. But another big part of the addiction picture is when you really nourish someone properly. And I'm talking about traditional diets. I'm talking about eggs. I'm talking about grass-fed meats and other things. Those people are well-fed. Their bodies are getting what they need for the brains to work better, for the bodies to work better. They're not on the hormonal roller coaster. They're not on a hypoglycemic up and down roller coaster. They just balance out a lot better. And with so many people who find they can't stop, they're having problems with cookies or chips or any kind of food addictions, and then there's the other addictions, the drug addictions, the alcohol addictions. When the brain and body are well-fed and not malnourished, they're just plain a lot happier. And so much of addiction is somebody's desperate attempt to feel happier, even for a brief period.
Is the soy affect the thyroid?
Absolutely, and that is one of the biggest reasons that people who eat a lot of soy will put on weight, and why they'll have problems with fatigue, lethargy, malaise, loss of sex drive, hair falling out, dry skin, and some of these other factors. We've got more than 70 years of studies indicating that soy has a bad effect on the thyroid. And most often we see that in the form of hypothyroidism, including some of the autoimmune thyroid diseases. Occasionally, the soy initially stimulates the thyroid and people will feel better initially, but it's like whipping a horse. You know, you get it to move more for a little bit and things seem good, but at a certain point it wears out and goes downhill fast.
Are there low trans soy spreads, you know, margarine spreads and things like that, really heart healthy? Are they really good for us?
I don't believe that any of these man-made high-tech products are good for us. Now, of course, you know, we're all being asked to be guinea pigs and to be experimented on eating these products, and we're told they're healthy. These are high-profit items, and they're marketed as healthy, and they've got all sorts of food scientists working to make the texture better, the color right, the mouthfeel correct, and all of those kinds of things. But what really is heart-healthy is the foods that Mother Nature gave us, and they include things like real butter. And I'm a strong proponent of butter from pastured cows that are out there eating grass and in the sun. And we've all been told that butter is not good for us, that we should avoid that. And for a while there, it was all margarines full of trans fats, and it took quite a while before people finally acknowledged that those were causing cancer, heart disease, mental illness, and all sorts of problems. And now they've gotten rid of the trans fats in some of those products, but they've got all these experimental solutions. So, yes, maybe they're low in trans fats, but there's other problems. I just say trust Mother Nature.
I do, too. In fact, I live in the Appalachian Mountains, and I live out in the middle of the woods, and I have lots of bugs and lots of flies and things that fly around my house. And I put a dish of that new kind of butter out there, and you know the flies won't even land on it. If they don't land on it, it makes me know that it's not for us, you know.
Doesn't
if the
that
flies
tell you
won't
something?
Even have it. That does. Okay. Another question I have is the rancidity problems with soy. People aren't really aware of that.
Yes, the biggest problem is rancidity with vegetable oils. And soy oil, of course, is the best-selling vegetable oil that's on the market. It's usually the primary oil that's in something like Wesson oil or if a bottle's labeled vegetable oil.
Or mayonnaise.
Yeah, most of them have soy oil in them.
I looked the other day at the grocery store at every jar of mayonnaise. I could not find a jar of mayonnaise that didn't have soy in it.
And then you go to the health food store and they're full of canola, which is not much better. It's just promoted as healthy.
That was my next question, actually, if you knew about that.
Yeah. Well, when we get into the rancidity problem, here's the problem. When you take something like a soybean or a canola seed or a sunflower seed or any of these things, and you crush them to take the oil out, the moment you do that, the oil, when exposed to light and air, will start to go rancid. And if as part of that crushing process you're using hexane solvents and all sorts of other things, you're compounding the problem and adding all sorts of carcinogens as well. But any oil, once it's taken out of the seed, will start to degrade quickly. And that's why when we buy things like vegetable oils, we do need to buy small quantities, use them up fairly quickly, keep them out of the light. The better brand should be in dark bottles. And but the real thing is, it's so much better to just eat the foods the way Mother Nature designed them. Because something like sunflower oil, for example, if you're eating sunflower seeds, that's fine if they haven't gone rancid. And it's usually easy enough to tell whether they have or not. Or crack open a walnut, eat the nut meats. Avocado, olives, things like that. These are things that you can get the oil yourself. You don't need a billion-dollar crushing plant. But Mother Nature's fats that we've all been told to avoid, things like butter, for example, they don't go bad that quickly. You may have grown up like I did, where say you'd fry up some bacon and your mom or your grandmother would collect the bacon and keep it out, and that fat doesn't go bad. And it's a very healthy fat in many ways. And I know this is very shocking news for many people, but these fats are the healthier fats, and part of the picture is they're not going bad quickly.
I'm glad to know that because, like I said, I did just move back into the country away from the city after 30 years. And we have a septic tank where I am now. And I wonder, do I save my oils or do I throw them out? That's played in my head 100 times in the past month. So you prefer to use that than bottled store-bought oils?
There are some that are healthy for us that we would typically buy. For example, coconut oil, wonderful quality oil, supports the immune system, nourishes the thyroid, traditionally used in many parts of the world where people are radiantly healthy and have no heart disease. And yet we've been taught for years and years that coconut oil, because it's primarily a saturated fat, is dangerous. But it's full of lauric acid. It's a wonderful fat for us. That is one fat that I would suggest you have and keep in your kitchen, and one that does not go bad easily. And another one would be one that you probably know is good. Most people do, olive oil. And, you know, again, that's the common sense thing. You know, with olives, you could make olive oil. It's something that you theoretically could make. It's also something that, if stored properly and you buy a good quality brand that's not mixed with other things, that's good quality olive oil, that will last and it's healthy. I'm just saying don't use massive amounts of it. I like a variety of fats. Butter is wonderful for us. The better quality that you can get, the better for the environment, the better for animals. And I do support grass-fed, but we all have to get the best that we can where we live.
That raises another question. There's a creamery near where I live, and they have milk that's pasteurized but not homogenized. Is that a good source?
If that creamery has plain pasteurized and not ultra-pasteurized and not homogenized, that is a much better product than you typically find in the supermarket.
You can actually make butter with this milk if you want to.
Well, that's wonderful. You would take the cream and you would use that. And if it's got the cream at the top, you know what to do with that. And
how do you do that in the modern day? Do you have to get a churn and churn it, or is there another way?
You know, you can actually do it fairly easily in a blender.
And how do you do it?
Well, you just put it in, not the whole milk, the cream part. And you blend away, but the thing is, you have to be extremely vigilant because there's a point at which you got to stop it, and if you go too long, it will go back to being pretty liquid again. So it's doable. I've done it many times when I couldn't get raw butter, but I could get raw cream.
So you just put it in the blender and watch it.
You get to the point where you start to notice it's getting thicker. It's making the cream. It's looking like, or you know, the cream is becoming what looks like butter.
Okay.
And you've got to catch it before it goes too long. And usually, right at the point when you're about to stop it, you're going to hear a different sound in the blender, and you got to catch it right then.
Okay, that's good to know.
But,
great.
You know, if
go
people
ahead.
Just use butter, even if it's supermarket butter, it's still better than most of the vegetable oils.
That's another question. I read in your book where soy is used on fresh fruits and vegetables to keep them from aging.
That's something that's an invention. It's a patent. I'm not sure how much that's being used. But when you go to a supermarket, a whole lot of those products have been sprayed with this or that, so some of that stuff may be soy ingredients. And that may or may not be a problem depending on your own situation. We are seeing more and more people with severe soy allergies. And those people are really having so many challenges because more than 60% of processed and packaged foods have soy ingredients. Nearly all the fast foods have soy ingredients. And then we're finding things like soy in fabric softener and, you know, vegetable washes and preservatives. We're finding soy biodiesel fuel, like some of those people, if they get behind a car with the exhaust, and it's biodiesel fuel, they're going to react. And these people are having a really, really rough time with the soy allergies.
What is the relationship between soy products and nitrates? And while we're on it, I'm going to go ahead and say this so you can address both of them. Alkalinity and amino acids.
Okay. The nitrite issue with soy has to do with processing. And it's the same kind of issue we would find with any food that has been heavily, heavily processed. It would be things like, you know, we would find that with, say, corn protein and hemp protein and wheat gluten products and any number of other things where there's very heavy processing going on. And some of those high temperatures and high pressures and alkaline and acid baths and all of those things end up resulting in a nitrosamine problem. And that's been connected with cancer. So again, it's not really a soy issue exclusively. It's just that so many people think anything with the word soy on it is healthy. And most modern soy products are junk foods like all the other heavily processed and packaged foods.
Okay. What about excitotoxins? What is its relationship to soy?
Excitotoxins are things like MSG and aspartame. And again, we're getting back to processed and packaged foods. And so it wouldn't be exclusively a soy issue. But so many soy products, like if you're going to get, say, a soy veggie burger, or, say, tofu that's flavored with, say, a teriyaki sauce or something, or any kind of processed food where there's a lot of flavorings, et cetera, added. MSG is typically used by big manufacturers, and I don't care whether they're you know, small health food companies, which these days aren't so small anymore, or whether it's a supermarket kind of company. They're all using artificial flavorings, or sometimes called natural flavorings, which are pretty much the same thing. They're using MSG, and that might be hidden in the form of, it might be something like autolyzed yeast extract or natural flavorings or something. It might not say MSG, but MSG is in there. And another excitotoxin that's a real danger for modern women especially is aspartame, all those diet sodas. Not a soy issue, but boy, do avoid those sodas.
Yeah. I totally agree. Let's see the next one. Heterocycloamines. What is that?
Basically, we're still dealing with processed and packaged foods, and there's something that some people may be trying to avoid by not grilling their food outside with a barbecue. You know, a lot of people have gotten scared about barbecues, and once in a while doing something like that I would not worry about, but with heavily processed foods, whether it's soy or wheat or something else that's been heavily processed and put into packaged, processed, and junk food, something like that, they might be in there too. You might find MSG, you might find heterocyclic amines, you might find all sorts of things in there, the nitrosamines, lysinoalanines. There are all sorts of stuff in processed and packaged foods. So it's not really a soy issue, except for the fact that many otherwise intelligent people have the idea that these heavily processed soy products are healthy, and they wouldn't think of going and buying something like Hamburger Helper at the supermarket. They wouldn't think of eating at McDonald's or Burger King or Carl's Jr. But they're thinking these heavily processed soy products are good for them, and they're not.
That's my next question. Iron deficiency and manganese toxicities. What can you tell us about that?
The iron deficiency, that can come about when people are eating heavily of soy and they're not eating animal products that have usable iron. The kind of iron that we can really use is hemi iron, and you find that in meat, particularly red meat. And that is something a lot of women today can really use. And there's nothing I see more clearly than a client comes to me, and she says, "Dr. Daniel, I've been really good. I've been eating soy because it's healthy. I've been avoiding red meat. I haven't had red meat in, say, 3 years or whatever. And yet I'm feeling worse than I've ever felt before, et cetera. What can I be doing wrong?" And, well, first of all, I need to enlighten her about the soy problem. And then I will try to get her on a good quality red meat. And by that I mean, grass-fed, good quality, not supermarket meat. And wow, some of them notice such a difference right away. It's like they're initially very reluctant to eat red meat, either because they don't think it's spiritual or because they've heard it's not healthy. They haven't had it for a long time. And their body just says, "Give me more, give me more." And they might have intended to just eat a little bit, and the next thing they know, they're going through 8 ounces, 16 ounces, and wanting it the next day. And they might be eating it for a couple weeks straight, and then their body finally gets enough, and then a couple times a week will do just fine for them. But they're just starved for the usable iron and some other things, and it's making them anemic. And part of the problem with soy is it not only does not have that usable iron, but it contains the phytates that block the absorption of iron. And that can be a problem. The other problem is people who are eating a lot of packaged and processed foods might be eating things like breakfast cereals that have been enriched with iron, and that kind of iron is not the hemi form of iron that our bodies can use, but it's a kind of iron that can build up in the body and contribute to cancer and heart disease. So the iron problem can be both a deficiency of the kind that we need and an excess of the kind we don't need.
Now, heavy metal toxins to these same bites.
Yeah, that's another issue with the heavy metal toxicity.
I mean, iron being a heavy metal, if it's the wrong form.
It has that kind of effect in the body, and we do need to get that out of the body. And likewise with manganese, it's another mineral that the body needs to function well. Manganese is important. But many people these days, I'm seeing a lot of clients who have very high manganese levels, toxic levels. It affects how they're feeling, and they're describing a lot of the things that you described earlier, Eva, where they feel like their brain is just not working as well as it could. And it's affecting, say, children in terms of their behavior. The kids are attention deficit disorder problems, learning disabilities. Mood swings, a lot of possibilities all affecting the brain. And when we get the manganese down in these people, they start to feel so much better. Now,
How do you get it down?
That's where I have to work with people with laboratory assessment and putting them on a suitable supplement program, as well as improving the diet in general. If somebody's been on a vegetarian diet for quite a while, and particularly if they've been eating a lot of soy, they have not had sufficient amino acid cysteine in order to detoxify properly. And so they haven't been detoxing for quite some time. We need to improve the diet. We need to get the cysteine back in that person. We need to get some good fats in the person. A lot of these people are low fat because health conscious people think they should be low fat. So we improve the diet, we improve the fat levels, the cysteine levels, and then the part that I do more customized is I just look at their ratios of zinc to copper and calcium to magnesium and sodium to potassium and other things, and we try to optimize those so the body has the energy to start detoxifying. And with manganese, part of the issue could be that, say, a baby had soy formula during the first 6 months of life. That baby will have manganese toxicity because it's 50 to 80 times as much manganese as you'd find in breast milk or dairy formula milk. So that would be a high-risk group for manganese toxicity. Vegetarians eating lots of nuts and seeds, they might be going very high in manganese.
So is manganese and iron, is iron the antagonist for manganese?
It's part of the picture, but all these minerals are part of, they have to be in balance or nothing's going to work right.
Okay. All right, we have about 4 or 5 minutes. You want to take that time to tell where people can find you and talk about anything that you want to talk about?
Terrific. I have 2 websites. My websites are wholesoystory.com, and that's the title of my book, The Whole Soy Story. And wholesoystory.com, you can contact me directly from that website, or you may find the information you're looking for, frequently asked questions, articles, etc., about the problems with soy diets. In addition to that, I've got a 2nd website, which I love and I want people to visit. It's called naughtynutritionist.com. And I'm the naughty nutritionist because I like to be outrageous and humorous and debunk a lot of nutritional myths. And one of those myths we've talked about today, and that's the idea that soy is a health food. But there's many, many things about the world of nutrition that I'm trying to get people straight on. And naughtynutritionist.com has some of my best articles in that regard, and again, contact information. The place to buy my book, The Whole Soy Story, is Amazon.com. You can get a great price on the book there, and they'll ship it to wherever you live. If you live internationally, that's great. You can get it from Amazon. And I would urge people to join the Weston A. Price Foundation, because we are really fighting to get good nutritional information out to people and to support local farmers and our right to buy directly from farmers, to buy local food as opposed to processed and packaged foods. And believe it or not, we have to fight for that right. So please do support our local farmers.
I second that. I really do. Well, your book's a fabulous book.
Thank you.
I was amazed by it. I really was amazed by all of the information in there. I learned a lot, and I can't always say that when I read a book.
And
is there any other thing that
better?
I do. Well, I stopped using the soy. We moved up to the country. We don't have a microwave. We don't have a television. We don't have a phone except for my cell phone to do this. And we're making our property self-sustainable as much as we can to get away from all of that, those problems.
Fantastic. Well, good for you.
My kids actually love it, too, and I'm a teenager. Can you believe that?
It is amazing when you get them into the country and you get them doing real physical work and you're in contact with the earth and the land and the animals. It changes everything.
So is there anything else that we got a couple of minutes that you would like to talk about? Infant formula, anything you want to talk about?
I think I'd like to urge people to trust Mother Nature and to be skeptical about father technology. And the way I see it is Mother Nature didn't make mistakes. When she made foods that contain fat, protein, and carbohydrate, she wasn't trying to kill us. You know, Mother Nature loves us. And the fat is in those eggs and in those meat products, and the cholesterol is in there because our bodies and brains need that. And father technology, and I love my Mac computer. I love the fact that I can fly around the world. I'm not trying to bash technology completely because there's much that's just wonderful about technology. But when it gets to father technology messing with food, father technology takes apart real food into parts because you can sell one food that's a whole food and a real food, the food that Mother Nature gave us. You can sell that food once, but if you divide it up, you can sell it several times. So if you convince somebody to drink skim milk because the fat's terrible, you sell the skim milk, and then the person craves ice cream, and you sell the ice cream. And so it goes with the soybean. They've broken it up into vegetable oil and soy protein and lecithin. That's three products. And it's about profit. It's about marketing. And whenever we start hearing something that chocolate's a health food or hemp is the health food of the month or it's red wine or all of this kind of marketing hype, I just urge people to be skeptical. The people who eat like our ancestors and eat a variety of real foods and whole foods and what I call slow foods because we're making them from scratch, those people don't get into trouble. A variety of good foods.
Well, I can't agree with you more. Thank you, Dr. Daniel, and I hope you'll... Do you have other books?
I'm working on the Naughty Nutrition book, and love to come back on your show to talk about that.
I hope you will. You let me know when it's ready.
I will certainly let you know. Thank you so much, Eva.
Thanks for taking the time, and thanks for the guts to write this book.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Just
tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.